Welcome to The Wayfarer's Guide to World Building, a podcast by Mythos and Inc. Publishing, where we build worlds one story at a time. I'm Kyle.
I'm Emma.
I'm Allison.
Today we are talking about both the new Netflix show and world building we found within it, Shadow and Bone, based on the beloved novels by Leigh Bardugo. Special thanks to our patron TDM for making this episode possible. If you'd like to support the podcast, visit us at patreon.com/mythosandinc. For the structure of today's episode, and of course all these episodes, we each have a world building topic that we're bringing to the table to discuss and then share ways to employ those same strategies into our own world building efforts, because that's kind of what we do with The Wayfarer's Guide to World Building. So we wanted to say welcome to all of you that have joined us. Well, the topic I'm bringing to the table, I'm very excited and passionate about, is religion and belief systems. There are so many in this show that I struggled to like really grasp all of them, and started to think, man, maybe I should have read the books because there's probably more to these things. So I'm only describing from the show's perspective. You're welcome to fill in the gaps where it is. For me, there were several incredible representations. And I think first and foremost has to be Inej. Her character is spectacular. And just this belief about the saints and this almost ancestral / Catholic kind of melding of worship between the two. But just there are the bastions of ideals that are worth striving for, and that they don't necessarily have to be dead. Like how she looks at Alina as both a friend and a mentor and something to idolize is a really beautiful moment. And I loved how this was the one little trinket that her mother left with her that wasn't of value to anyone else, but it was still of value to her mother, and it's all that she has left. And that is so central to her character that she's unwilling to give it up for only the very slight reason, like the I don't kill anybody kind of thing. And then she does, but there's a purpose for that. And it's that, because that is so strong of a character definition, that scene becomes so much more powerful when she breaks that character for a specific purpose. Some of the other ones that really stood out to me was the Grisha. I mean, of course, there's this almost faith-like pagan witchcraft idea around things, right? Before they are in the past, we go to that historical episode of where the rift was, the big nasty was drawn, was they were seen as witches, right? They were nothing more than tools. And if they got out of line, they were to be sacrificed and run and burned at the stake and all the rest. And he just wants to save his people. And we see some of this images of pagan witchcraft that I thought was incredible when they have the horns, the scene that none of you all liked and I thought was kind of cool.
I loved that scene.
So you loved the scene. You thought it was grotesque. That's fair. But melding of the horn, of the antlers into her neck.
Yes.
And that is a very pagan, you know, old Celtic, you know, the antlers, the bones, and this becoming like, no, you are now like a god in this belief system. And I'm going to brand you as that so that you become a symbol for all, like, as a, you know. And it's a very visual thing. And then it's a very common thing is to have like the headdress, to have this holy symbol of some type. And that's why I loved when she basically swallowed that into herself, of like, I will not be defined by the symbol. And there was this shunning of this pagan goddess that she was being drawn out to be, but to instead just be herself. And I thought there was some real interesting weaving of belief and religion in several of these things.
I think the horn thing, I never thought of it actually until you just said it, but the horns, because that is like Pan or Cernunnos, or they go by many different names kind of things, but
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the horned god, the pagan horned god. And that is a really interesting comparison, because correct me if I'm wrong, I think what Pan or Cernunnos, or what we'll just call the horned god, is supposed to be like kind of all-encompassing of nature and of balance. And so thinking of Alina being the light that like kind of vanquishes darkness and brings back that balance. That's a really interesting visual imagery I hadn't thought of before.
I found it incredibly moving, but there were also like other, and I would put in quotation marks, not really religions. This is why I would say belief systems, but there were others in there. Like Mal had a very strong belief system, and it was very karmic. It was, if you put good out into the world, good comes back to you. If you put evil into the world, evil comes back to you. And there is that one scene where he's fighting the Darkling, and he has the chance to kill him, and he steps back and basically says, like, I'm going to let, you know, the evil you created kill you. I can't remember the exact quote that he says, and it takes him away. It's just like, I'm not going to put my evil into the world. I'm going to let the evil you created consume you. And that very, you know, do good and good happens, do evil and evil happens. And the rest doesn't really matter. And it's interesting because he has this love for Alina, but he doesn't have worship for her in the same way that Inej does. And it's interesting to see how those two are different dynamics. And then, of course, you've got Kaz and Jesper, which are wonderful human beings. Kaz, correct me if I'm wrong, was burned in the past.
Yeah.
Like he strikes me as somebody who had a strong belief system and was betrayed horrendously and is now scorned to where he, I called him a humanist. Like he believes in himself. That's the only thing, person, it that he can trust. That is the only one that will not let him down.
Yeah, I think that's definitely.
And that is that, like, I've got nothing else to believe in except those around me. And then there's Jesper, who is the same. You know, I'll believe, like, you know, everything is good, but he's just more laissez-faire. He's not as burned. He came from a happy home life, I'm guessing, based on the character. And it shows. And you have these two, they kind of believe the same things of, like, trusting themselves and their own abilities. But one got burned and one didn't, and they manifest in different ways.
I think they're two really good examples of existentialism, but on opposite ends of the spectrum, in that Kaz is very, like, they both believe a man is but the sum of his actions. So Kaz takes it all very seriously because Kaz is like, I am the sum of my actions. So, like, I'm not defined by fate. I'm defined by what I do. So I need to do what I really believe in, because this is what builds me as a person. And then Jesper is on the complete other end where he's like, I'm not defined by fate. I'm the sum of my actions. I can do whatever I want, kind of thing, right?
I love that take. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, yes. What I love is that the religion gives each of these characters such strong motivators. Like, their belief systems really give them such strong imagery and purpose for why they treat each other the way that they do. Like, we see it in Jesper's free will living.
Yes.
Like, laissez-faire, just happy-go-lucky, and, like, things will work out in the end. They always have before. Yeah. And Kaz is like, nothing works out.
Yeah.
there's nothing but doom and gloom. We have to force it to work in our favor. But even stepping aside from just individual characters, there were mass societies and cultures in terms of belief systems, right? You have East and West Ravica, where you have one where the one scene that really struck me was I never get her name right. The tailor starts with a G.
Genya.
Is it Genya? Okay. Because we watched with subtitles and the volume was really low, so I couldn't really hear her name and I would just see it. But she was a gift, right, to the queen, but kind of became the king's concubine.
Yeah.
And like, there's a clear, like, men kind of rule the world over here. Whereas on the other side of the rift, there's this almost, and in what was the place that the Kaz and all Ketterdam. Of them were from? Ketterdam. There's this rise of, like, feminism and female empowered nature. And it's not wholly true, but it is certainly not unheard of. And I felt like a bit of a difference between those two in terms of how women are treated. But I'm just a guy trying to perceive these things. So I wanted to know what you guys thought.
I think it's interesting, your observation with Genya and, like, the Grisha and stuff like that, because on the one hand, I think it's almost like they view, maybe it's less the Grisha, but more the tailors specifically. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there is a line in there where she says, like, oh, I'm just a tailor.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, she did say that. I do remember that line too.
Yeah, so I think it is because she's a woman, but I think it's in addition to that, the fact that it's because she's a tailor. I don't know if that would happen with like a squalor or something like that. But mm-hmm. the fact that she's a tailor kind of is like a contributing factor to the abuse, right?
But I think too, like, even though when the king gets sick, it's not the queen who rules. She's actually taken out of power and isolated. Like, women don't have as much power as they'd like to think they would on that side. Whereas you could see in Ketterdam, they could.
Although I will say another interpretation of that is she had to be taken out of power. Right. So they're you don't take someone out of power unless they have a chance of screwing up your plans. Right. Maybe it's not a huge chance because I definitely do agree the king was definitely the one in charge there. But it could be read as, you know, he didn't want her to take power. So he had to figure out a way to get rid of her sort of thing.
Well, and as you were talking about the Just a Tailor thing, too, I was thinking of that scene in the historical context episode with the Darkling and his, you know, what was her name? Nina? No, what was the name of the girl? Luda. Mm. Luda that died, that he loved, the heart render that died. He brings her and he's like, I need a healer. And it was all we have is a tailor. Mm-hmm. And he just looks angry in that moment.
Yeah.
And so I could see him like, from that moment on, he probably doesn't like tailors. They're not good enough.
That's true. Yeah, because they didn't help. Yeah.
And some of the other things that I thought of course, was the difference in climates as it pertains to cultures. And belief systems. So when you have a warm climate, and this is true in our world as well, a warm climate, people are far more interactive. They tend to be more extroverted and conversations tend to be a little bit more on the superficial, but very boisterous and loud and people are interactive. Whereas in a cool culture or a colder climate culture, typically they are a lot more closed off and isolated and individuals and that type of, and then that holds true inside this verse as well, where you see that with the Nordic folk, the Freya,
I
never get it right. Fjordins.
There you go.
It's weird. I lived in Norway for like a year and I still can't do the FJs. I think that was one of the things that I caught that I thought was done really, really well as you go between Ketterdam and that. And then you also have some of the other like cultural beliefs of things like the wall between East and West Germany. Mm. Kind of to me seeing like, wow, there's some similarities of like separation of families, growing discontent of reparations that needs to happen. Like, wow. As somebody who was alive when the Berlin Wall came down, I was like, this feels very familiar to me. And especially that it was East and West.
I saw that comparison too, actually, especially with the line when Zoya goes over the rift at the end. And they're like, we can't get Ketterdam. And she's like, no, I have family on this side. I'll stay with kind of thing. And I was like, it's interesting to think of like the fact that they are families split apart from it. Yeah. And like the Berlin Wall is like actually probably a pretty salient example in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it derives like two entirely different cultures arose that were once one. Something divided them. Now they're all unique.
Yeah.
And they, you know, that sort of thing. But there's still this like power imbalance and there's reparations and there's bitterness and all of that comes around in their belief systems.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool. So what do we do? How do we write religion and belief systems and what can we learn to insert it into our own writing?
I think your acknowledgement of like Kaz and Jesper having similar but different belief systems, I think that's a good example as to how you can write a certain structure. You could write, whether it be a structured religion or a really intense belief system or like a military set of morals, or you know what I mean? Like there are so many structured systems that you could have in a story and they can motivate characters in entirely different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I like that. I like when that happens.
And there could be good examples and bad examples of each of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Not everybody is the same example. Like allow someone to be the bad pagan.
Yeah.
I'm not very devout. I do my paganism on Sundays and on the high holidays.
I'm a Saturnalia, you know. Kind of pagan. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the other things is that allow symbols to hold power to characters, right? In all of our, you know, earthly religions, there are symbols that we hold on to, and they don't have to necessarily attach to a formal religion, but you see things like the tomb of the unknown soldier, right? Yeah. Is one of the symbols, and if there's a meaning that is attached to it that people have inside, and there's a belief system, and symbols can really draw out those emotional moments. So whether it is that little cloth tied necklace, or whether it is a person, whether it is naming all of your daggers after saints, I'll stop talking about Inez, whether it's or whether it is some of those other symbols of like the antlers.
Yeah.
Those can have like a lot of multiple contextual meanings that draw on our knowledge in the world and feel very real in your fantasy world. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to kind of springboard off of that, or to make explicit what we were kind of hinting at, is also that a belief system doesn't have to be a religion. It can be a belief in anything, as long as it's something like, you know, for Kaz, who had a belief in himself and the people around him, even though he didn't believe in any sort of higher power or fate or anything. That's what makes belief systems or religions or any faith in a story compelling, is what it means to your character. So whatever it is that is motivating your character, just they need something to believe in. Everybody believes in something, whether it's religion or not religion, or themselves or their friends or anything. Like, everybody has belief in something. So figure out what your character believes in and have that motivate them.
All really good ideas, especially mine, but all of them are really good. No, just messing with you. But all really good ideas. And religion and belief systems is crucial for motivation of characters, of plot, and even of entire societies, and is worth considering in your world building efforts. That about wraps our series for Shadow and Bone. Man, we've talked about a lot of like the little world building elements of it. If somebody hasn't read the books yet, like me, but only seen the show, is there more that I could derive by reading the books?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, like, I touched on this in our previous episode, but I really think that Alina's inner character journey, while it was portrayed pretty well on screen, it's definitely not the worst that I've seen. It's a lot richer. There's just a lot more in the book. So I definitely say, for that perspective, reading the books is really good. The books actually do, you know, have some downsides, which we have also talked about. The books are very, Shadow and Bone specifically is very straight and very white. Six of Crows, I haven't read, but it is more diverse. She did kind of learn from her mistakes and amend that in previous series. Shadow and Bone, the book series, does not have that great diversity. So that is a drawback. And also, like I said, I don't like Mal as much in the book, but I do think that the books are worth reading, even if you've watched the show.
And I'll add, the world, and it's one of those things that's just by nature, a book is going to have more opportunities to build that world than a Netflix series will, right? Because you have to keep a certain pace. Whereas with books, you can take time to describe the little palace and what the molding looks like in it, and what the fabricator's workshop looks like, what they're up to. And you know what I mean? Like, there are more details in it. And I think the world in the book, the world in the show, fantastic and very rich. The world in the books, I'd love to imagine just walking through Little Palace and existing in it, kind of thing. Like, it's very rich. So
wonderful. Well, if you're looking for a fantasy or sci-fi writing community, we'd be happy to have you join ours on Discord. Head to our website, mythosinc.com, and click community under the about section. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to say hi, you can email all of us at podcast@mythosinc.com, especially if you have like found one of those canes from Kaz's cane, for both Christiana and I, who apparently need one. Until next time, fellow wayfarers, go build worlds. Bye.
Bye.